Welcome back to the Mandarin Blueprint Podcast. This is episode number 164. My name is Phil Crimmins, and the Mandarin Blueprint Podcast sort of serves two functions. One is it's a way for us to communicate with the people on the course directly. Mandarin Blueprint is an online video course that teaches Mandarin systematically, starting from pronunciation into characters, into compound words of two or more characters, into simple sentences, into more complex sentences, into graded stories and graded paragraphs and opinion pieces, into longer form stories. And the whole time, you're continuing to learn characters until you get up to the point of knowing 3,050 characters through our mnemonic system. And by doing that, you should be able to pick up pretty much any Chinese text and be able to understand over 98% of it. And if you can understand over 98% of a text, then your brain will be able to figure out what the remaining 2% is based on context. So there's a lot of research that's gone into that. It's called extensive reading. And, you know, we've been getting these great bits of feedback from people over the years about how it's helping them. And, you know, in today's podcast, we're going to talk about some of the ways in which the community has been able to sort of help answer all these little things that come up. But so that's one purpose of the Mandarin Blueprint Method. It's a service, a feature of the course. So if you're on the course and you have a question, we talk about it on the podcast. We send you a link to the clip of the moment where we talked about it on the podcast. And then you can, you know, have that forever at that point, and you can, you know, have your answer and then have it in the course for people who come later and, you know, need the answer to that question. Oh, we already answered it because somebody else had asked it previously. So that's one purpose. And then the other purpose, of course, is to communicate with people about Mandarin Blueprint who've never heard of it before. And so for those of you who haven't heard of it before, consider this. You could have a course where if you have any questions, not only will the creators of the course get back to you, but they might even get back to you on a podcast with a video linked to the exact moment that they're talking to you. And so that's something that I don't think any other courses for Mandarin learning offer. So, you know, it's a really good fringe benefit of being a member of the Mandarin Blueprint course. And we have if you're unfamiliar with the course so far, we have a monthly subscription, an annual subscription, and a lifetime membership. We recently made the course a lot bigger. And, you know, we're still in the process of rolling it out, but it's all, you know, it's going to be rolled out. If anybody who signs up now, by the time you reach the upper, intermediate, and advanced course, it'll be totally rolled out by then, unless you're super, super fast. But nonetheless, though, we're still in the process of rolling those out. But we are going to get to the point where there's over 9,000 lessons in the course. Now, that's a number that's so big that sometimes people might go, 9,000, that seems like a lot. And remember that not every lesson requires you to completely devote loads of time to it. You know, a lesson might be the kind of thing where you go, okay, this lesson is just telling you that the character you just learned is used in several nouns, and nouns are kind of easy to learn, so you don't have to spend much time in the lesson at all. So don't be intimidated by the number. Think of it more as like it's the ultimate set of reference materials that are all graded to exactly where you're at. It's really cool how Mandarin Blueprint works in that way, in the sense that, you know, you don't want to see something at the wrong time. You know, there are lots of resources out there that give you technically information. I mean, a dictionary gives you information about everything related to Mandarin in some sense, right? But the problem is that it's not at all organized in such a way so that you see it at the right time. So you can look up a word, but if all the example sentences for that word include other characters and words that you don't know, then it's not useful to you. But if I introduce the word to you at just the right moment, and all the example sentences are made up of characters and words that you do already know, then suddenly that's a really useful, you know, dictionary entry. So you could almost think of Mandarin Blueprint like that. Like, we walk you down the path of learning exactly what you need and then only introducing new content that contains that which you've already learned before. So we know exactly what your path is. We know you're at this stage. And so this is what you know already. And therefore, anything new we introduce will be in the context of what you already know, which is the way that you should learn pretty much anything. And we've designed it that way. So that's awesome stuff. Now, update about the upper intermediate course. I want to sort of apologize to everybody because I was under the impression that we were going to be able to get you the upper intermediate course like a couple of weeks ago now, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And we've run into some just some technical difficulties with setting up the new flashcard software, traverse.link. Nothing major, just stuff where we've realized that like, oh, there's a functionality issue and fixing the functionality issue is not instant. You know, it's the kind of thing where it's like when you have so many cards and so many sentences and whatever, sometimes even just making small adjustments can take a few days because you have to say, okay, we're going to change all the flashcards in relation to how we organize them in each level on the Traverse platform, which is going to take, you know, 5 days to do for our assistant because it's just so many, so much information, right? So we're working on it. It should be out soon. I'm you know, hesitant to give a time frame because I feel bad. I gave a time frame before and we missed it because some things came up that we weren't expecting. But just, you know, bear in mind that it's already ready on the course platform, and we're very soon going to be able to offer it to you with the flashcards in hand. And just as a reminder, for those of you who are lifetime members, you're going to get access to it first. And the reason we're giving access to you first before we give it access to anybody else is because there are almost certainly going to still be some technical issues with the flashcard software that we want you guys to help us resolve. So we're going to have a special email address for you to send us feedback. We're going to have you email the head of Traverse, Dominic, so that he can, you know, find out from you exactly what the issues are. And then after you guys have been using it for hopefully, you know, just a few weeks, we'll have worked out all the kinks, and then we can start giving it to everybody who is a subscriber. And, you know, and also, yeah, and also full bundle owners. There's about 800 of you who are owners of the full bundle, which means that you own Pronunciation Mastery, Phases 1 through 5, and the Intermediate course, but you don't own the Upper Intermediate course and Advanced course. We'll have a special offer for you guys to just purchase it as a one-off thing. If you don't want to purchase it, that's fine, but you'll just have to have a subscription to be able to access the Upper Intermediate and Advanced course. And, you know, so up to you in the end, but for those 800 of you or so who are full bundle owners, you're going to be getting that offer as soon as we've gone through the testing period of the for the lifetime members. And once they've given their feedback and we feel like it's ready for prime time, then we'll make that offer to you. All right. So with that in mind, let's go ahead and go into the comments and emails from this week, starting with Song Tan on level 21 complete. He says, I am doing great reading the opinion pieces and really enjoying it. Thank you. I'm elated just to be able to recognize the words, pronouncing them, discovering their meanings. Because my brain is so engaged in deciphering and recalling my memory store, I am way too focused on individual words and not understanding the flow of sentences. I asked my Mandarin tutor to read the sentences for me, and then I realized that the pauses that she introduced, and even the breathing, into the process changed the interpretive landscape entirely. That's an interesting point. Even at the native speed, with the correct pauses and emphasis at certain junctures, I could anticipate the speaker's intent and message. The upshot of this is that Mandarin Blueprint can provide the foundation, but as Phil mentioned, in order to recognize complexity, I will benefit more if I engage regularly in Chinese content, TV dramas, trying out Chinese speaking with other native speakers. And for many of us who live in Western countries, that is difficult, but not impossible. Yeah, so that is a great point there about how, you know, sometimes when you hear a native speaker go through a text, and you know, that's why we provide the audio, but still, you know, if you hear somebody else do it, you get another sense of what the sort of natural pauses are in the text. It really can help quite a bit with understanding, you know, what's coming next. There's a lot that gets communicated non-verbally. So if you're talking to somebody and you see how they pause, you see their expression on their faces, and, you know, very subtle things that are probably even hard to articulate, your brain somehow can pick up on those things. And so that's a great bit of, that's just a great thing to point out there. And I'll also note that he says, I'm way too focused on individual words and not understanding the flow of sentences. Well, that's to be expected when you're in level 21. Level 21 is the first level of phase 4, which is the first level where we introduce any graded readers. And it's even a little bit tough because at phase 4, as I've mentioned many times, you're not quite ready to do 98% comprehension with these things. So there's a fair few top-down words. And with so many top-down words, you know, it can be quite difficult to, you know, you have to just take it slow and there's no way around it. You just got to take them slow and also be okay with not totally understanding and then moving on, because a lot of these paragraphs, if you go back to them when you're further into the course, you'll be able to understand them very quickly and you'll think, you know, I can't believe I didn't understand this before because it's so easy now. But that, you know, that these are just the normal stages of the process of learning day to day. So I'm glad that you're feeling so good about it. Even in the first level, it only gets easier from here, which is kind of, you know, the nice thing about it. Next, we have John Sanders on Dai in context. He says, bit confused with this part, xia dai, as I thought xia was more to scare as opposed to pa, which is more scared. So in the sentence, 我的儿子吓呆了, wouldn't it make more sense to use pa so that the direct translation is something more along the lines of my son was scared, senseless, and dumbfounded? Because to me, I'm seeing the current sentence as something like my son scares people senseless. Right. So here's the way you can think about this. First of all, it is true that xia means to scare, but the type of word it is a what we call a verb hao, the buchongshi, where you have a verb and then the result of the verb. And when you make a word like this, it can sometimes turn into an adjective. So, for example, chi is a verb meaning to eat. Chi hao means like satisfied with your food, right? So it turns into an adjective like, well, chi hao le, meaning like I have, you know, eaten to the point where I'm satisfied. And you could just say it as like, you could say it as I'm full or I'm satisfied. And which is a way of saying like, it kind of turns into an adjective function, right? And then similar here, xia dai is to scare with the result of being dumbfounded, aka scared senseless, which is, you know, essentially an adjective at that point. Now, what John is saying here is he says, it seems to me like it says, my son scares people senseless, but there's no indication of that in the sentence. There's only the subject, 我的儿子, and then the next part of the sentence is describing the subject. 吓呆了. There isn't an object that is being applied, where the scaring is being applied to. Now, if I said, 我的儿子吓了我, or 吓到了我, either way, then that's saying, son scared me. And there's 我 as the object. So the 吓 is being applied to something. 我的儿子吓死我了. Would mean like scared me to death, right? And so in that case, it's still a it's still the object in the sentence that is being applied, in which case, yes, it can be a subject, verb, object. But in this case, there's no object, so therefore, 吓呆了 must be being applied to the subject. 我的儿子吓呆了. And because it's that verb how construction of a word, 下, verb, with the result of die, dumbfounded, that ends up having a more of an adjective function. So that's the answer to that one. Keith Evans on level 20 and phase 3 complete. Keith says, I'm looking forward to your graded readers. I have some graded readers, but they aren't in sync with this course, so they can be frustrating to use. Yes, exactly. This is the benefit of the Mandarin Blueprint method. And it's like, it's hard to conceptualize sometimes when you're outside of it, but if I just give you a graded reader and say, this is a, you know, upper beginner level graded reader, well, what am I basing that on? Well, I guess I'm basing it on just generally what upper beginners know. But with Mandarin Blueprint, the benefit is that we know exactly what you know. We know precisely what you've covered and what you haven't because we made the curriculum, right? So if we make a sentence, we know, you know this word, you know this word, you don't know this word, so we better give you a definition and the pinyin for it, and then you know this word. So we know this sentence should be understandable so long as we define this one word you don't know. And that means that when you're reading a graded piece of content, it's going to be easier to read and you don't have to worry about like, you know, is this defined or not? Like, for example, you know, I remember I used to see these graded readers and they would occasionally define a word. And I always thought, like, how do you know to define this word and not the word before it? Like, how do you know what the person reading this knows? Because you don't is the answer. So why define any of this? You know, like, why not just have every single word have a definition? But then, of course, if every single word has a definition, then you could hand it to somebody who doesn't know anything about Chinese and they're still not going to get much out of it, right? Like, but they could technically put it together. They could say, okay, here's a Chinese word, here's what it means, then here's another Chinese word I've never seen before and here's what it means, and here's another Chinese word I've seen before and I've never seen before and here's what it means. But it would still be like, nobody would think that's the way you should learn. It should be mostly understandable with the occasional word you don't know, and that word is defined. And the Mandarin Blueprint method makes it so that that's always the case. So yeah, hopefully, you know, you'll see, you can see, even if you're not on the course, you can see why that's such a benefit. Peter Hurd on Make a Movie for Shay. Peter says, when I check Pleco, it has the pronunciation as Shui. How often is this the case? Do I need to add Schultz, S-H-U, to my scene? So this is most often often pronounced Shay, S-H-E-I, by far most common pronunciation. It does have an alternate pronunciation, Shui, which is adding in the U sound. And but it tends to only be used by certain people in certain contexts. Interestingly enough, the Chinese president tends to say it as Shui. But he's also, when he speaks, it's pretty much always formal. Like, I mean, that guy is like one of the most like rehearsed people in terms of what he's saying. So it's always going to be formal when he's speaking, especially if he's giving a speech. Every now and then you'll see him in like some context where he's speaking a little bit more casually. But usually he's going to say shui because he's being really formal. And so I would only recommend knowing that it can be pronounced shui as an alternate, but definitely in your day-to-day life, always say shay. That's always what people say in day-to-day spoken Chinese. Now, if you wanted to add your fictional actor Schultz to your scene, that would be okay if you wanted to add a little flavor to it to make it clear to you that it can have both pronunciations, but it's probably not necessary. You'll pick it up over time. Annette Bicknell on Hao Hao in context. She said, I found it quite interesting how a tone change of the first Hao defines whether it is thoroughly, fully, or very good. You really have to listen to how it is pronounced, although the context, of course, is the giveaway. Right. Yeah, exactly. So what she's pointing out here is that there is one way of saying two Haos next to each other, which is an adverb meaning thoroughly. So really common one to hear is 你好好学习, which would just mean you should learn, study, you know, study thoroughly. And so that's what, you know, of course, all of you are doing by doing Mandarin Blueprint. And that is pronounced hao, hao, first tone of the second character. So she's a little bit off. It's not the tone change of the first character is only if it's two-third tones. It's still hao for if it's hao, 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 hao. Right, that's when it means thoroughly. But of course, hao can mean very, and hao can mean good. So you could say hao hao to mean very good, right? You could also, I mean, people often will say 很好 or 非常好, but hao hao is also very good in terms of a translation. So you could say 这碗面好好吃. This bowl of noodles is really good, right? And so that's, you just want to listen for that, hao hao versus hao hao, right? And, but Annette points out at the end, you know, the context is really clear, isn't it? You know, you say, 你好好学习, is not saying you very good study. It's saying you should thoroughly study, or 你应该好好学习. But if you say, 好好,这, 这碗面好好吃. Nobody is going to think you're saying thoroughly in that context, because you're saying it's very good tasting. It's really good. It's really delicious, right? So, interesting point there. And of course, anything else, like anything like this, you're going to get used to in no time. I mean, like, you know, to me, it's fun to think about how at all these stages, something is new. There was a stage where you didn't know how to say, you know, 1, 2, 3, or very good, or hello in Chinese. Like there was a stage where you didn't know the most basic characters. And like you get further into the course and you can look back in that and realize your progress. And like, you know, for me, there was a time when I didn't know the difference between hao hao and hao hao. And now it seems obvious to me, but like, still, there's always those stages, and it's good to sort of recognize that as you move forward. Next, we have Dan Malik on New Vocabulary Unlocked from Renkou and Rukou. He says, this is interesting. I've taken Mandarin and get the whole need for measure words, so I found the etymology part fascinating. Are you saying ko is a measure word? Yes, a ko is a measure word. Now, it's not always a measure word. It's one of its usages. So, for example, if I say, you know, ru ko, that is not a measure word because it's saying the entrance opening. It's a noun in that case. You know, so ko, it has the meaning of mouth or opening. So it's like, you know, the ru ko is the entrance and the chu ko is the exit. And it's this defining what type of opening is it? Is it the entrance opening or is it the exit opening? And then, but then I might say, 我的家有四口人, right? So usually you refer to ko as a measure word for people within a family, right? So I grew up in a family of four people. 我家有四口人, right? So there's four mouths to feed in this house. You could think of it like that. And you don't tend to say ko as a measure word for just generalized people in a room. You know, how many people are there? You'll just say, oh, there's 10 people. 十个人. You're not going to say 十口人 if it's not referring to your members of a family. But an example of here with 人口 is kind of, it sort of has this different feel to it because it's almost like you're saying, okay, this is the population of an area, in which case, and it's a generalizing noun. So I might say 三口人 is three people within a family, but if I say, if I put the noun before the measure word, like 人口, it's saying all the people who are in some range. So it's like, you know, if I say 一辆车, I'm saying one car. If I say 车辆, I'm saying all cars, right? It's sort of a generalizing noun way of going about things. And so 人口, it's saying all the mouths to feed within, you know, a stated set of borders. So, you know, 中国的人口多少? And, you know, you could use a little mnemonic for this. A country is kind of like a family. And so the people in the country all have a population. And so since it's kind of like a family, you'll use the ko as the measure word in the generalizing noun. So the 人口 is the population of that area. So that's, you know, you don't have to do that, but it's a way of sort of coming up with a mnemonic to remember. Ronald Kirshner on simple final U introduction with U. There is something I don't understand. Maybe I can get some help here. It has to do with the umlaut U. It seems that the umlaut is not written. I mean, you could sort of figure it out, which is U and which is the umlaut U. But with Lu and Nu versus Lu and Nu, I can't figure out when the umlaut sound is supposed to be used. Do I have this all messed up? Thanks. So we do actually have a lesson about this explaining this, but I'll just, you know, it's always worth going over again. So in the U part of the pinyin chart, there are only six sounds. There's U by itself, which they put a Y in front of just to make it easier to read, but it's all it is just the U by itself. So when you see YU, that's the umlaut U by itself. Then you have nu and lu, and then you have ju, chu, shu. So the J, Q, and X only ever get combined with either I, ji, qi, xi, or u, ju, chu, shu. So they don't put the umlaut for those because it couldn't possibly be the regular U. You never combine J, Q, and X with the regular U. You never put Y in front of the regular U. You put a W in front of the regular U. So those four pronunciations are always umlaut U, so therefore they don't actually write the two dots above the U. But in the case of Lu and Nu, they do write the umlaut. And the reason why is because you do have the pronunciations Lu and Nu, which is just the regular U without the umlaut. So therefore, you must write the umlaut next to the L or the N in the L-U-N-U, because otherwise you'll confuse it with the other real pronunciation. So basically, that's how you know. If the N-U doesn't have an umlaut, then for sure it's nu, not nu. And then from there, there's only a few pronunciations possible. So you could have nue, nue, which would be N umlaut U E. Or you could have Nguyen, Nguyen, which would be M N umlaut U. That's not true. Sorry, the N U A N would be the regular U, Nguyen, Nguyen. So basically, it's just those. It's just Nu and Nye, right? And so essentially, if you see the umlaut U, then that is the U sound. And if you see just the regular U with N or with L, then that's the U sound, the regular U. And then with the other four, the reason you don't see them is because they never get combined in another way. If you see J, Q, or X, or Y followed by U, that's the umlaut U, but they don't actually write it. I wish they had just written it, to be honest. I think it would be easier for everyone if they had just written it, but there's only six sounds, so it's not that hard to memorize. So U, Nu, Lu, Ju, Chu, Shu, those are the six umlaut U sounds, and they only get written for N and L. Annette Bicknell on level 19 complete. I struggled with level 18 sentences and was a bit apprehensive about the level 19 sentences, but to my surprise, they were much easier to get my head around. Almost any question I may have for a particular sentence has been asked by someone ahead of me, and I can take advantage of the responses. This in turn has me adding notes to the flashcards so that when I review that sentence, I have the explanation right there and everything makes much more sense. Adding the sentences at level 13 was the right choice you made. Seeing compound words, for whatever reason, won't readily stick in my mind in a sentence, and a sentence helps retain them. So yeah, this is pointing out two things about the Mandarin Blueprint method that make it so helpful. The first one is that the community makes the Mandarin Blueprint method good. It's like the fact that people ask these questions and then we answer them on the podcast and then we get to those and then we show in the course the answer to the question means that, you know, we come up with a system and the system might have little cracks in it like, oh, this sentence isn't totally clear or whatever. But as long as somebody ever asked a question about it and we talked about it in the podcast, you get the answer and that makes the sentences easier to understand. So like, while it's true that the Mandarin Blueprint method, you know, sets things up in the sense of like, okay, here's a word you learned, here's another word you learned, here's another word you learned, let's put them together to make a sentence. Sometimes there's still a bit of a gap, and the fact that somebody asked helps fix that. And so like, it just is constantly getting upgraded every day with the new questions and the new answers to the questions. And then of course, she points out that getting sentences going early at level 13 helps you remember the words you're learning, because language acquisition is not that each layer operates independently. It's not like you have the characters and they operate on their own. You just use the Hanzi movie method to learn the characters and that's all you ever, that's the only way you see characters. And then the words, they're just on their own. And then the sentences, they're just on their own. It's like, no, they all mutually help each other and move up and down the layers. And then their tendrils of the knowledge get mixed in between each other. And so it's a very cool thing to see that happening in real time. So I'm so glad that Annette pointed that out. Next, we have Dan Malik on Pick a Prop for Ma. He says, can I make it the same horse as in my movie, BoJack Horseman? I mean, all the other horses look the same to me, except the one that crushed my foot when I was little. He looked like the devil. I'm sure he did. Yeah, sure. It's totally fine. If you make a movie for a character and the thing that you use to make the movie clear to you, like ending it with BoJack Horseman, that's totally fine to then use that as your prop. It's not required. You can choose a different prop if you want, if something else makes more sense to you. Like, I don't know, you decide to have a horseshoe instead for whatever reason. Then that's fine. But you can also use the result of your previous scene, totally. Dan Malik on Pick a Prop for Tsi. He says, I'm finding the two representations of the E character where the downward stroke is clearly a right to left diagonal. My prop is a swan. And then the one squished to the side on this character where the downward stroke is straight vertical, the hook is smaller, and the razor blade for me, it's a yardstick, is bigger. Qi, which is nothing like a swan, is difficult to equate. Is this just something we need to memorize? Would I be better off finding a prop for the second form of the character, like, I don't know, a waterfall or something? Because I look at it and I don't think, ah, the swan. Yeah, I mean, it's up to you. I mean, the reason why we make it the same is because it's still like one stroke that is, you know, the only difference between the stroke is the size of the hook. But essentially, like, it's still a horizontal stroke followed by a hooked, you know, like it's all, well, first of all, it is considered all one stroke, but it's like the stroke is a hung, which is the horizontal, followed by a you know, a hook, and the question is just how big and deep is the hook. And so because it's similar, we use the same prop, but if you want to make a second prop for it, you can. I think that in the end, though, you don't end up, these types of little distinctions don't end up being a problem, because when you actually go to practice and write, you tend to write it correctly. You don't tend to write it the wrong way. So there's another level of it, which is like the muscle memory and just seeing it and recognizing that it looks wrong when you write it down. So there's that as well. Mirko R. on Walk in the Park, I've got Hense to study, which is one of the graded readers in Phase 4. He said, I read the comments before I started shadowing the first text, so I decided to keep track of my repetitions. At rep number 5, I guess I sounded like a dog trying to join in a Christmas carol. By rep number 25, I had evolved into a Neanderthal getting humiliated in a rap battle. Although this was by far the most frustrating part of learning Mandarin so far, the bottom line is I just finished rep number 45 and got it done. So do not discourage, friends. Once we've reached fluency, nobody will care how many repetitions we needed for a primitive text at 80% speed a couple of months ago. It's all just a part of the process. I agree. And remember with the shadowing in Phase 4 that our recommendation, there's 40 graded readers in Phase 4, and you could be very completionist and try to do, you know, 45 reps of each. I mean, you probably wouldn't need 45 by the time you got to some of the later ones, but, you know, if it took 45 reps each, that's, you know, 40 times 40 would be 1,600 reps, you know, total, and that's obviously a lot of time. You don't need to do that for all 40. I'd say probably pick 5 of them and, like, do 5 really well. Just, you like it, so you read the story first and you like the story for whatever reason, so you decide, okay, I'm going to really get into about 5 of these, and then that helps you a lot with sounding natural, flowing like a native, you know, having the types of pronunciation improvement that isn't just analytical, like, okay, this is first tone, or sorry, a second tone followed by a third tone, and it's, you know, it sounds like ni hao, ni hao, right? That's obviously very analytical, and it's on the word level. Sometimes you need to speak more on a conversational level, on a paragraph level, like when you're making several points in a row, and there's a flow to the sentences. Shadowing really helps with that, and so you want to do it, but you don't want to do it to the exclusion of everything else. So maybe about 5 of the stories really dig into them. Gave you Arctica on Vocab Unlocked from Z. She says, since you don't give any example sentences for the meaning lucky, I suppose this is one of those characters that is nowadays used more in writing loan words or names phonetically, rather than its original meaning of lucky. It depends on the word. You know, there's Zixiang, which is means auspicious or lucky, and then you've got Zili, but they're kind of more advanced words, so it does contain the meaning of lucky in certain contexts, but yeah, oftentimes it's used for something like Zita, which means guitar, in which case that's a transliteration. So yeah, you're right that it is often used in transliterations, but it does sometimes have its meaning of lucky in more advanced words. So that's why, you know, if it's going to get used in that way, even if it's not used right now, it will be. So you might as well learn its original meaning. She continues, anyway, I chose an image of the most legendary guitar player I can remember to represent this on my flashcards, thinking he had great skills, but must have also been lucky to become so famous. Good memories from great concerts. I was lucky to be there too. Right, so that's a good, you know, using both. It's like it gets used in the word guitar, but it also, you're making an association with lucky. Great, great mixture of the skills there. My movie seems to naturally have multiple soundtracks without me even trying to think about it. The Unknown Soldier, sure, prop, lucky to have come back from the war this time, and J.I. Actor also feel lucky as they are sitting on that huge red couch shaped like a mouth, listening to the Guitar Hero play for them live in a private concert set in my null set kitchen. No, I won't tell you who he is. It would just reveal my age, and you're probably too young to know him anyway, so just pick your own Guitar Hero. Fair enough. I felt I had no context for lucky without an example sentence for that meaning, so I started to make a movie from the image of a Guitar Hero without the meaning of lucky in it at all. But it just all came by itself, starting from the guitar association. So much fun. I'll go listen to some songs I haven't heard for a long time while I study the next characters. Thank you. So that's great. You know, you're just finding ways to to mix all of these different skills together. That's really, really cool. Okay, another one from Gavier Arctica on Vocab Unlocked from Yu. There's a sentence, 他于昨天到达了成都. If I just said, 他昨天到达了成都, both would mean he arrived in Chengdu yesterday, right? How does 语 change the feeling of this sentence? Is it more formal, as in written text maybe, not so much spoken, and or emphasizing that he arrived in Chengdu yesterday, something else? It's just a matter of formality. You'll see 语 used in this way, and it kind of is used similarly to 在. So like, you could use 在 to mean to emphasize that something is happened at a certain place or time. You can say that's, you know, 他在昨天到了成都. If you were not going to use 语, then you'd probably just say 他昨天到了成都 to be a little bit more spoken. You probably wouldn't use 到达 in the same way. It's like, you know, 到达 is also a bit more formal than just saying 到. So if you're not going to use 语, if you say 他于昨天到达了成都, then 语 and 到达 are in agreement of formality. Like, they're both formal and they're both, you know, 匹配 is the word that you would use. They match up because they're both formal. So either go both formal or go both not formal, right? And so that's really what it comes down to. It's very, using 语 in this context is very written. It's very written to do it that way. Mackay Albert on 用什么办法可以学好汉语? So he says, he's referring to the sentence, 我可以用什么办法学好中文吗? Is it a common rule that you can put 好 after a verb to indicate doing that thing well? Absolutely. So it's a verb result. It's that verb 好 structure, which we talked about earlier in the podcast, 补充是, which means that you have a verb and then the result of that verb. So 学 is, of course, to learn. 学好 is to learn successfully, essentially. You've learned it well. And so, yeah, absolutely, you can do that with many things. You know, there's so many examples. It's, you know, 吃好 is to have eaten to satisfaction. You know, it's there's lots of things that you could use that with. But yeah, just keep an eye out for that. Laura Walter on lie in context. I was reading the sentence, 三个月来我没有吃过米饭. And was curious what the function of 过 was playing in the sentence. So first of all, the speaker sets a time frame, 三个月来. So within this time frame is what the speaker is talking about. And so the speaker is not saying this is something that's true forever. So if I say 我没有吃过米饭, that would mean I've never eaten rice ever, right? And so it's possible, I suppose, as a 34-year-old person to have never eaten rice, but it's unlikely. But you might say, oh, I've been doing low carb, so 三个月来我没有吃过米饭, which means in that time frame didn't experience this. So 过 is an experience marker, 没吃过 or 没做过. 我没跳过伞. That's the thing I point out. I've never dived. I wanted to say I've never skydived before, is a way that you could say that. And that just means I've never done it. And that's true in my case. Now, if I was a skydiver, I might say, 一年以来, or 一年来我没有跳过伞, which means I haven't skydived this year. But yeah, that's essentially what the speaker is saying here. They're saying they haven't had that experience, 过, in this 3-month period. Final question this week, Omar Yassin on Diu in context. Maybe I missed something, but what's Mian doing at the end of this sentence? 他们把面包丢在桌子上面. Right, so here we have 桌子 and then 上面. You could just say 桌子上, that's fine. But 上面 is just saying the upper face. So Mian is the face of something. You look at a cube and it's got 6 faces, right? So you could say 上面 is the top face and 下面 is the bottom face and 侧面 is the 4 side faces. And so you could say, you know, 左侧面 would mean like the left side face of the cube or whatever, right? And so that's essentially all it means. It's just a way to put it. Now you can say 上, 桌子上. 桌子上 is essentially just a contraction of 桌子上面. So that's all it is. Hopefully that's pretty clear, Omar. And that covers this week's Mandarin Blueprint podcast. If you haven't checked out Mandarin Blueprint before, go to mandarinblueprint.com and get started on a 14-day free trial to find out if it's for you. I assure you, it is the best way to learn Mandarin Chinese online. And we'll see you next week.